This week on Family Anatomy, Anatomy of Pretending.
Hosts of Family Anatomy are psychologists, but they're not your psychologists. So if you want to talk to someone about family or mental health issues, you can get a referral from your family doctor. This show is for information only.
Welcome to Family Anatomy, your source for parenting and relationship information with your hosts, Dr. Giuseppe Spazzano
and Dr. Brian McDonald. And we are going to be talking a little bit about Giuseppe's favorite thing to do. Pretending.
I like to pretend.
You do?
Sometimes.
Sure.
Not as much as when I was a kid.
You engage in role-playing activities?
Which is... I do?
You're an avid Dungeons & Dragons player?
I'm an avid role player.
Apparently yes. You are. Yes.
When I play hockey, I'm a kind of a role player. I like to score goals.
You're a thug.
You know? Yeah.
Sure. That's your role. All right.
So,
listen, this is an episode that we're joking around and laughing a little bit. This is something that Giuseppe felt very passionate about. He said, I want to talk about pretending. Like, why haven't we done a show on pretending yet? This is crazy. How could we have been doing this show for a year and not done a show on pretending? And I said, well, when are we going to talk about pretending?
See, you need some more pretend in your life.
Clearly I do. I'm so logical.
You are. And, you know, we're going to shave those ears down a little later.
Yes.
But for now, let's get back to the show. Pretending. It's something that happens. Let's go back a little ways.
Please.
Okay. You're a kid.
Back in time.
And you're 1 year of age.
Sure.
Can you pretend play?
When I'm one?
No, you can't. You cannot pretend play at one. You don't have the capacity to pretend, have symbolic play at one. It develops at 1.5 years of age, roundabout.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of, because before that...
Can I, just before we go on, I just want to interrupt for a second for the people who aren't in the studio with us. Giuseppe asked me that question. And, you know, like the driving instructors who are sort of trying to give you the answer he's shaking his head. No, you can't.
No, I'm trying to give you a tip.
I thought you were telling me, stop the recording. No. I don't know what to say next.
No. It wasn't like that.
Okay,
I'm trying to smooth over the rough spots in the show.
Well, I knew the answer to that question. I just wasn't sure what your gesticulating was about on the other side of the table. So at one, the kids aren't really engaging in pretend play. They're engaging more in sensory play,
exactly.
Right? Motor play. They're learning about their environment and what they can do and
looking at stuff,
climbing,
maybe
and
smelling stuff, touching
reaching
stuff.
For things.
Yeah. But it's whatever it is exactly what it is. If it's a block, it's a block. It's nothing else. It's just a block.
Right.
If it's a doll, if it's a house, if it's like a toy house, if it's a car, it is exactly just what it is. And they don't have the capacity to pick up a banana and go vroom vroom with it.
Why would they? They pick up a banana and they talk on the phone. They talk on the phone.
They would.
It's the banana phone.
It would be the banana phone.
Exactly.
Yes. Now, so they can't do that up until they're a year and a half because they're in this, what Piaget called a sensory motor stage. That's
right.
What we're talking about, right?
Right. But after that,
they develop this ability to have symbols. So the banana stands for a phone. Well, anything could stand for anything.
You know, it's funny, though. At first, anything can't stand for anything, right? It has to resemble the thing that they're pretending that it is. Some of the stuff that I found, what they talk about is they only know that it's pretending. They can only pretend if they're doing something with it. That kids who are very young, and even up to the age of 4 and 5, they found, and we'll talk about the studies later on, they found that kids who are very young only get that it's pretending if there's an action linked to it. And they don't quite understand the mental part, the imagination part that goes along with the pretending piece. But you've got two very young kids. You've got two kids that are sort of in that age range, right?
I've got, I've got almost a three-year-old now. Let's say three.
Okay.
Three very shortly. And I have a six-year-old. And they, you know, they do pretend play all the time. Right now, something that's, you know, a little bit concerning to myself and my wife, my six-year-old has my three-year-old pretending to be a doggy. Because, you know, they both like it. I've told my wife I'm going to draw the line when he puts the collar on him.
Could be a bit strange.
That's a little over the top.
That's some strange
but
kind
they
of...
They both like it. He goes, come here, little doggy. And, you know, he's not doing it all the time. There's some times where he feels like doing it. And
now, wait,
one
this
pretends
is,
to bark and be a dog. And
this is the younger one is the dog or the older one?
The younger one's a dog.
The younger one is the dog and the older one is the owner.
That's right.
And your younger son is almost three. He's two and a bit.
That's it.
When my younger guy was two, you know what he wanted to do
when
he grew up?
Yeah.
He wanted to be a lion.
Oh.
He was going to grow up. He was going to go to lion school. He saw that his older brother was going to kindergarten at that time. He was like 2 years old.
Yeah.
So his older brother was going to kindergarten to learn how to read. And his brother was all excited about taking the bus and all of that stuff. And he's like, I'm not going to go to your people school. I'm going to learn how to be a lion and go to lion school. So kids at that age don't really understand the difference between fantasy and reality, but it's very cool.
Isn't it? Now, the thing that really grabbed me about this topic was that I witnessed something between my son, the six-year-old, and my two nephews.
And your nephews are older.
And they're quite a bit older. They're, 9 and 12 or 10 and 12, something like that.
Okay.
And we had all gone to see a movie together.
Right.
Uncle Giuseppe took the three of them to a movie. And on the way back from the movie, something really funny happened. The two older boys noticed that my son had picked up a bead, a bead.
Like a little round bead from a necklace kind
exactly.
of thing? Okay.
Had picked it up off the sidewalk and was kind of looking at it and saying it was cool. And, you know, it's just a bead. I think all three of them know that it's not that cool, but it was just fun to say it was cool. And the 10 and 12-year-old, my nephews, they decided to pretend that it was so cool that they were going to try and figure out a way to trade for it just by picking up garbage. I mean, it was garbage along the, like we're walking through this field, and I guess, you know, kids had thrown away a Coke bottle. There might have been a cigarette package on the ground. There might have been a coffee cup, a rock, you know, a shiny rock.
So they're cleaning up a field to trade for a bead?
They would be picking them up and going, I'll give you this for the bead. And the other nephew would go, no, don't. Here, I got some stuff. I'll give you this for the bead. No, and they would go back and forth and back and forth of who was. And my son was a hard bargainer. He would not give up the bead.
Not for any amount of garbage.
Not for any amount of garbage.
Now, when he turned down their deals, did they just throw the garbage back on the ground? Or
no,
did they,
they kept... I'm saying this went on for at least 25 minutes.
Wow.
At least. I would say closer to half an hour. And it was amazing to watch it. It was amazing to see how this... I mean, there's nothing in it for them. There's no goal, real goal.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing in it for them except the fun of using your imagination and pretending. That's all there. That's the only reward you're getting from that. There's nothing else.
It's its own reward.
It's its own reward. You're in the moment. There's no goal. There's no, if I do this for this person, they will be nice to me later, or they will get something for me later, or they'll give me money later or something. There's no reward outside of that moment.
And so what you did was you took all the scraps of paper that the kids had picked up and you found a pencil or a stick or something to write with, and you wrote down, we must do this.
Yes.
On Family Anatomy.
Yes.
You drew diagrams.
Well, like
I saw your notes.
It's
like a cave painting.
You remember our creativity episode?
Yes.
You always have to write these things down.
Sure you do.
Right?
Yeah. That's how you remain creative.
That's how you remain creative. Now, it also brought to mind one other episode from my earlier life. Now, you would think I would go all the way back to childhood, but I don't. I do actually remember some. You must remember some pretend things from childhood.
Sure. Yep.
Okay. Give me a second. Go ahead.
Now you want me to tell you? Okay. Yeah, I remember when I. It's kind of funny, actually, given the job that I eventually came to do. But yeah, I there are some pictures in the photo album of me wearing a lab coat and some like Harry Potter looking glasses, and I was Dr. McDonald at 4 years old. Yeah.
No kidding.
Yep.
Really?
Exactly.
Incredible. Now, you weren't a psychologist. You're probably, you know, mixing potions or something, right?
Sure. I was diagnosing and prescribing.
Were you?
Ritalin. And I was probably a child psychiatrist. That's why I'm always on the side of the pharmaceutical companies in all of our discussions that we have about those kinds of things.
You were brainwashed early.
Early on. I was all about the medication.
Now we know.
I wanted to be an MD.
I, as a kid, you know, I remember shooting a web up on my grandmother's, the ceiling of her hallway. And I would go up and down that hallway, running up and down the hallway, shooting the web.
Yeah,
Spider-Man, right?
Hey, see, if you're going to pick a superhero,
that's the one.
It would be him.
And I remember when I was in my early 20s, I went to Toronto to help my sister move. She had moved from our hometown to Toronto. Mm-hmm. And when we got there, we had finished moving. We were kind of tired. And we just walked out onto this field and we started to play baseball. Only we didn't have a bat, a ball, or gloves.
Wow.
Yeah.
Very good. There are places for people who play imaginary baseball.
It was 100% imaginary baseball. And I know what you're thinking. There was no influence of drug or alcohol.
No, I know you. Involved. You're a teetotaler for sure.
Okay.
Yeah. Gotcha. So you were the designated driver.
It was strictly the fascination of pretending.
Sure. And you, of course, were the umpire and calling everyone out.
Well, that's the thing. You see, you would throw the ball and the pitcher would say strike, and you know, the batter would go, "No, it's in the stands."
Right.
Like, and there'd be an argument.
Like cowboys and Indians with 4 and 6 year olds. I got you. I guess it's not cowboys and Indians anymore. They don't really play that. It's more cops and robbers or Transformers.
No, I got to tell you something. We're just joking around, but there is something about that stuck with me. It stays in my memory. Only lasted maybe half an hour or something. But it stays in my memory as this vivid thing that we actually... And there was, like I said, it's something about being in the moment there. You're not looking forward to anything. You're not looking back to anything. You're right in the moment and you're imagining something. And there's something special about it.
Well, and that's, as an adult, I mean, you were sort of an adult at that time.
Yeah, I would say. Despite the fact that it sounds juvenile.
Probably about as mature as you are now, but... As an adult, living in the moment is something that we've talked about before, I'm sure, on the show, or that we've written about on the website, that sometimes it's important just to forget what's going on in the past or the future and just focus on now and find the inner child, right?
Exactly.
Positive psychology. Now,
which brings me to something else. I worked with a social worker a few years back who would run groups for adults to teach them how to play. And the idea was that they had forgotten how to play, that they'd forgotten how to pretend and to have fun with life the way children do, and that was in them somewhere, and that they had to bring it up and be comfortable with it again.
Play, sure, can be beneficial for adults. It's important, maybe, sometimes to have some fun and find that inner child. But... it's really important for kids, right? When we talked to Dr. Elkind from Just Ask Baby, he talked a lot about the importance of play and how some of the toys that take the imagination out of the play, the dolls that talk and that do all of the imagination for you, there may be a place for some of those sometimes, but there needs to be a place for creative, imaginative play, and that's really important for kids' development, right?
That's right.
You remember when we talked about
that? I remember that. I also remember that there was an opposing view, And that, do you remember when we talked to Dr. Dutwin?
Yes.
And he was talking about how, you know, you're not necessarily not using your imagination when you're dealing with, when it looks like you're dealing with more concrete things, you can still be using your imagination a great deal.
That is a possibility. I still think that free play is an important thing, right? And I think you wouldn't disagree with that, right?
No.
There's been some research that talks about the acting out kinds of play. Because when you're playing with those sort of toys that talk and stuff like that, you're not necessarily acting out and pretending with your buddies, you know, like being Spider-Man and chasing after each other in the yard and engage, like acting something out. That's kind of an important sort of particular kind of play. And there's some researchers who are saying that kids who do that a lot have better language skills, have better social skills, right? You talked about imaginary friends before. We talked about that on the show. You wrote about it on the website. There's a book, I can't remember the author, but he talked about the imagination economy and the idea that you need to have some kind of a skill that can't be outsourced. You need to have something that's unique in order to drive your economy. And what we need to foster in kids in order to do that is the creativity. It's the creation and the imagination and things like that, that's more important. That's something that you can't get from anywhere else if you have a school system that fosters that. But guess what? The school system is going in completely the opposite direction.
Right. With standardized testing and meeting the goals of tests and so on.
Well, it's that literacy and the literacy and math skills are being pushed to younger and younger and younger ages. Did you see, I don't know if you looked at this when you were doing your research, but there's a group called Alliance for Childhood, and they summarize some research, and they've been funding some studies to look at, well, what are people doing in the classroom and how much of it is play versus structured kind of a teacher at the front of the class lecturing,
right,
in kindergarten.
Wow.
And they had a nice table in that study that they broke down the daily kindergarten schedule of some schools in New York City and Los Angeles. Now, how long are you in kindergarten? I think most kindergartens are still only half day, right? So you might be there 2.5-3 hours.
Right.
Literacy instruction, over an hour, 75 to 88 minutes.
Hmm.
Literacy instruction for 5-year-olds. Math, 48 to 46. Testing, 26 minutes, 21 minutes. Free time, maybe 20 minutes out of your day.
That doesn't sound like a lot. Now, that's kindergarten, and that makes sense if it's half a day, because kindergarten and half a day doesn't get a recess.
That's true, but this is not experiential kind of learning. It's
while you're in there, sure.
They're not learning from doing. They're trying to get the letter sounds down and stuff like that. And that's what they're focusing most of their time on, as opposed to the creativity and stuff. Those other kinds of things that are also important, right?
That's right. I mean, that's the trend. That's the trend. And that's why we were talking about how co-curricular activities are just as important in a lot of ways.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's going to happen a lot more in those kinds of activities.
So I was looking at all of the research on this kind of stuff, and I had my 6-year-old with me. Now he's beyond the age of a lot of the studies that I was reading, but there was one in particular that talked about, well, do kids when they're little really understand when they're playing the imagination part that's involved? Do they really get that what they're doing is representing something else? And what the results suggested is that, well, they don't necessarily understand the representation, because you talked about symbols at the beginning, right? That a banana could symbolize a telephone or something like that. But they're not quite getting that unless the action is tied to it. And so I was sitting with my 6-year-old, and they used a story here. They had a picture of a troll with a thought balloon over their head, and they found out that kids as young as 4 years old can understand that a thought balloon is a picture of what someone's thinking. So they were able to figure that part out. So they had this troll who comes from Trollland, and I read the story to my son. It's a little tiny story. This is Lala from Trollland, and Lala is growling. So it's a picture of Lala growling, and a thought balloon over her head has a picture of Lala growling, so she's thinking about growling. And it says, well, Lala has never seen a lion because there's no lions in Troll world. Lions growl, but Lala doesn't know that because she doesn't even know what a lion is. So the story goes on like that for a little while, and then they ask these 4 and 5-year-olds the question, is Lala pretending? she pretending to be a lion, but she doesn't know what a lion is. Almost all of the 4-year-olds and half of the 5-year-olds said, well, yeah, she's pretending. She's growling like a lion. She's pretending to be a lion. So they didn't quite get that she needs to know what a lion is in order to pretend to be a lion. Right. My 6-year-old was like, well, she would need to know what a lion was before she could pretend to be one. So I just thought that was kind of an interesting part of all this. What those researchers sort of guessed from those results is that for little kids, play might be as real to them as any other activity that you engage in. So if you're pretending to work in the store to be the shopkeeper and people are coming and you're selling your bead,
yep,
that's as real to little kids
as actually being in the
store and doing those things. And so it becomes another important, maybe it's more important to skills development than you might think for kids who are older than 5.
Kids between 2 and 7 years of age, those kids are the ones that engage in the most imaginative pretend play between 2 and 7.
Yeah.
So you can imagine. So before 2, like we said, you don't have the ability. After 7, you slowly, and grade 7 is like grade 1.
You know? Yeah, it's the end of grade 1, beginning of grade 2 for sure.
So starting with the end of grade 1, beginning grade 2, you start to see this tail off. Now, why is that? It might be what we're talking about, that they're pushing it down and they're pushing it down.
That the school system is squeezing the imagination out of kids.
That's possible. Now, wow. So between 2 and 7 is when it happens most frequently. It also happens to be between those years is when the kids around age 5, right? They start between 5 and 6, they start to make a much finer distinction about what's pretend and what's reality.
Yeah.
Before then, they don't really know. So that's going to the point you were talking about before.
Mm-hmm.
You're imagining it's the same as it actually happening. You don't have that really strict, well, that's just pretend and that's reality. You just don't have that yet.
Yeah, there was in one of the things that I was reading as I was preparing for the show, there was a little story of an interaction between 2 girls, and they had found a thing that looked like a magic wand, a fairy wand, but when you wave it, bubbles come out. And so they were talking about it, and one little girl said to the other, well, that's not a real wand. A real wand changes things into other things and makes like fairy dust when this one just blows bubbles. It's just a pretend wand. It's right. Not a real magic wand. So obviously, those 2 girls having this discussion didn't really get that. Guess what? There's no such thing as a magic wand. So that's kind of an aside, but the play, this imaginary play, what we want to emphasize, the reason why we wanted to talk about it, is that it's important as you're getting older to be able to live in the moment. That's part of what positive psychology is about. Sometimes to be able to just find your inner child and have some fun. It's also important to the development of, in younger kids, to the development of language skills and social skills and all kinds of abilities like that.
Empathy,
sure.
Because in order to pretend, let's say you're pretending on your own and there's a couple of characters, you're having to put yourself in this pretend character's shoes to be able to have this dialogue.
Right.
Which is one thing that, let's say, autistic kids would have trouble with.
Yeah.
Because they have a hard time putting themselves in someone else's shoes. So that's why you see that their play lacks that kind of symbolic element, that sort of, they tend to really have that sensory, that early sensory period just sort of carry on beyond the 2 years of the first 2 years of life.
Well, and they can get stuck in the details and miss the big picture, like noticing that the troll was growling, but not quite putting together the fact that, well, you have to know what a lion is in order to be pretending to be a lion.
Right. Or looking at a car and maybe going to, or like a bicycle, let's say, and going to the spoke, one spoke on a wheel and focusing just on that spoke.
Right. Some researchers have found that kids who are more into the imaginative acting out kinds of play are less aggressive and have more self-control later on in life, which is another interesting finding and brings home the importance of making some time for kids to be able to do this. Like, don't get me wrong, reading and math skills are very, very important. But we are pushing those down and down and down to a younger and younger age.
We have to look at a fuller person, right? And so we've talked on the show about the importance of a lot of different aspects of development, not simply reading, writing, and arithmetic, but also your emotional development, your imagination, your physical development, your self-esteem, and how they're related to a more fully rounded person.
Your social skills, all of those things. There was one thing that I found that I thought was pretty cool, and this was in a journal for teachers. It was a journal that was actually called Reading Teacher, and it wasn't really a study, but it was about how in a classroom you could take a book and turn the book into a jumping off point for that kind of imaginative pretend play, and how that could be used to directly improve things like reading comprehension and memory for the narrative and all of those things that we're trying to teach kids. But you could teach it in a way that's also playful and imaginative and creative at the same time. One example that came to mind as I read that is, have you ever read those Scaredy Squirrel books with your kids?
I think so, yeah.
Mm-hmm. This is a Canadian author, but it's about a squirrel who's so afraid of everything around.
I don't think I've bought those books, but I've seen them in the bookstore.
Yeah, this is a squirrel who's afraid of bats and germs and Godzilla and Martians, and he doesn't want to leave his tree. There's always something that he would like to be able to do, like he'd like to be able to go to the beach, or he wants to have a friend, but it's too scary to do that, until at the end of the story something happens that knocks him out of the tree and he winds up having a good time. But before it gets to that point, he always builds a kit. He has an emergency preparedness kit that has a whole bunch of weird things in it, like sardines to distract sharks that might be in the river and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And as I'm reading, we always try, the boys and I, when we get a new one, we always try and guess, well, what's he going to use this for and what's he going to use that for? And after looking at this Reading Teacher article, it makes me think, well, we could make an emergency preparedness kit and talk about, that would be an imaginative, creative, experiential way. And at the same time, you're putting together some weird kinds of objects with a crazy emergency plan that could protect you from Godzilla or aliens. Kind of a neat idea.
That's an excellent example of one of the things that because maybe we can talk about that, one of the things that parents can do. So it's nice to provide some of the objects that they might be able to have imaginative and playful things created through. It's also important to engage with them on these things so that it signifies that you value it and that it's something worth doing.
Absolutely. And the problem is always, and this is the problem in the classroom too, is that there's only so many hours. There's only, you have to really think about how you're going to prioritize. We've talked before about how sports and exercise are really important. And the more I've read about it, the more I believe that's absolutely true. And so that would have a high priority. Then there's the reading and math, and that has a priority as well. I think at a young age, maybe it should be lower on the priority list, but it's very important too. And then you have to find time for some free play and some creative and imaginative play as well in order to develop those other abilities for that well-rounded child who's got some good imagination and creative abilities.
And like you said, you have to figure out a way to fit it in. We're both very busy fathers, psychologists. It's hard to find the time. What I do is I every night there's a bedtime routine. When I get to the part of the night where we're reading books, right after the books, my son asks me to tell him a story. And every night, the story is fantastical.
Mm-hmm.
The story is not a real life story. It might start off real, and then something absolutely fantastic happens that's not possible and imaginative, and you could just see how he's engaged by that. And it reminds me also of, another thing that parents should keep in mind. Because kids will often say things that are not possible, imaginative. Like, for instance, your son with wanting to grow up to be a lion.
Right.
Now, you could have responded to that with, listen, son, you don't grow up to be a lion. You grow up to be a doctor, a mechanic, a lawyer, whatever the case may be, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that's not what you want to do. Because I think some parents might say, well, aren't you sort of leading them down the wrong path if you don't correct that? That they won't be able to distinguish reality from fantasy and that kind of thing? That's not what would happen.
No, kids would outgrow that kind of thing. He no longer wants to go to lion school. For a while, he was going to be a paleontologist.
I know you were sweating it for a while.
Well, I told him I'd go back to monkey school so I could ride on his back and pull on his mane.
And that's what you want.
Exactly.
And that's what you want.
Yeah, for sure. So you don't really have to worry that kids aren't going to be able to tell the difference between fantasy and reality. The fact is, there are some people who do have difficulty in that area, but it's not because of the way that they played when they were little.
Exactly. And you know, and we get this question a lot. Like, some people say, you know, what is schizophrenia, or how do you know if you're losing it or going crazy? And that's one of the things that you're not able to distinguish fantasy from reality. Has nothing to do with what your parents did with regards to symbolic play and pretend when you were younger.
No. And you know what? I think that brings us to our top three things.
Let's do it. Top three things. And the number one thing for parents to remember is that imaginary play is important in the development of a lot of different things. And in empathy in kids, and language skills, and experimenting in resolving conflicts, and it helps develop imagination and creativity.
The number two thing is that kids who engage in fantasy play don't necessarily get confused about the difference between fantasy and reality. Little kids, as part of their development, have something called magical thinking, where they might get mixed up a little bit, but most kids outgrow that as they get older, and so fantasy play isn't a problem. And in fact, for lots of other reasons that we've talked about, you might even encourage it.
That's right. And the last thing to remember, the third thing to remember, is that pretending teaches kids about living in the moment. And, you know, there's a professor, Julia Levine, at the University of California, Berkeley. She had a really good definition of playing and pretending. She said it defined as those sequences of behavior that emphasize process rather than a goal and involve, well, the rest is not as important. The important point is that it's the process of it, and they're living in the moment, and it's kind of it can be a highlight in a kid's life.
It's about the journey, not the destination.
There you go.
Let's get to our website of the week.
Let's do it.
And the website of the week this week is parents.com.
Now, parents.com, I mean, it's got a lot of different information in it about pregnancy, baby names, about toddlers and preschoolers.
Well, there's
food
a magazine.
Recipes. There's a magazine as well.
Yeah. They've got video on here and everything. It's quite it's another site that's huge in terms of the things that the information that's available. Yeah.
That's right. And it just so happens that they also have an article, The Power of Make Believe Play, that I think our listeners might be interested in reading.
It's sort of like what we talked about today. I just noticed using props to represent real things is one of the things that they're talking about there. So there's a lot of information. In fact, there's so much information, it's sometimes hard to find exactly where you want to go. There's so many different things, but there's information for parents. There's stuff for babies and toddlers. There's stuff for older kids. They've got recipes on there. There's even a baby names. We didn't click on that one, but there's even a way to look at possible baby names if you're pregnant. There's lots of pregnancy news and stuff like that on there too. So parents.com is our website of the week. And that brings us to the end of the show.
And that's it for us. Visit us at familyanatomy.com or email us at info@familyanatomy.com. And we'd like to thank everyone for getting the word out about the show, because it's really helping us. And Brian, do you have an announcement?
This is one we talked about not too long ago, but never hurts to bring it up again. You mentioned sharing the show with other people. Well, one way that more people can see what we do is by voting for the show at Podcast Alley. So if you go over to podcastalley.com, there's a little search box in the corner. Search for Family Anatomy or the Family Anatomy Podcast. You click on the vote button, enter your email. They'll send you a little response that you click on. and boom, you voted for the show. And that helps more people to find us, and that helps more people to listen to the show, gets those statistics up, and just keeps motivating us to keep on keeping on. As usual, we'll leave you with a bit of a tune tonight by Brother Love, who's over at brotherloverocks.com.
Thanks for listening. It's a family thing. Hey! You know what to do. FamilyAnatomy.com